On the other hand, there is some restriction to the power of the state. You've got this legitimate authority under the love of neighbor to use the sword, but there's restrictions. The state, like the church, has no right to make laws restricting the inner freedom of the conscience. And thus Protestantism, from its very beginning, is committed to, in principle, committed to freedom of religion, freedom of conscience. How well it keeps that principle is another matter. But this is, by the way, in contrast to Catholicism, which until Vatican II in the 1960s was in principle opposed to religious liberty. The Church has changed its mind about that at Vatican II. And at present, the Catholic Church is one of the greatest advocates of religious freedom. But that was not true for most of the modern period. But Protestants, by the way, didn't always live out their commitment to religious freedom very well, especially in the case of the Anabaptists, which are a very interesting test case, because the Anabaptists didn't fit the model of inner freedom of faith, right? For the Anabaptist, faith is essentially participation in a radical alternative religious community. To be a faithful Anabaptist is to be active in that radical community, so that faith is not simply inward for the Anabaptists. It's expressed outwardly. It is an outward thing. It's the life of a community, and it's a radical and subversive community. Right? The rulers in Christendom recognize that these Anabaptists are functioning subversively. They're providing an alternative model for Christian life which undermines the authority of the state, and that's why they were suppressed. Right? They didn't play the game of, oh, faith is just inward, right? And that's free. That's the freedom of the conscience. But outwardly, we obey the sovereign, whatever he says. In fact, Luther, when he first heard about the Anabaptists, was opposed to persecuting them. But later on, he actually, in the 1530s, said, well, it seems cruel to punish them with the sword, these Anabaptists, but it's crueler when they reject the ministry of the word with no sound doctrine of their own and seek to suppress the true doctrine and undermine the social order. In fact, Anabaptists were persecuted in Wittenberg as blasphemers and as partaking in sedition. Right? They were subversives. They were, even in their pacifism, they were undermining the authority. In fact, they were. They undermined the legitimacy of Christian rulers. They weren't playing by the sort of modern game of freedom of religion is inner. Let's see how that modern game works out in practice. There's a real reason why freedom of religion tends to be restricted to what's in your heart. It's much harder to give people freedom of religious activity, freedom of religious expression, freedom of religious communities. Well, the characteristic move of the Lutheran Reformation begins already in 1520 with Luther's address to the German nobility. Remember, he appeals to the German nobility to help reform the church. In effect, he's asking them to function as emergency bishops. The bishops of the Roman church are not fixing these problems. You German princes need to fix it. So from the word go, the German princes, the German political rulers, are intervening in the church. They're also protecting the church. Luther's own safety depended on Frederick the Wise, the ruler of Saxony, protecting him from the emperor, as we remember. The Lutheran Reformation throughout its history was dependent on the protection of the Lutheran princes. Luther was under a death sentence ever since the Diet of Worms in 1521. So his whole life, until his death in 1546, he was under the death sentence. He was protected only by his prince from the Catholic Emperor Charles V. The Wittenberg program of church reform, the Reformation in Wittenberg, beginning in 1521, is carried out backed by the power of the prince, especially in 1527 with the Visitation. Priests Catholic priests who resisted the Protestant Reformation had to deal with the power of the sword, had to face punishment from the prince. Eventually, the Lutheran princes had to get together and defend the Reformation with the sword against the emperor, Charles V. In 1531, they formed the League of Schmalkald. So the Lutheran princes are getting ready to fight even against their liege lord, right? Their feudal lord, Charles V, the emperor, is officially the emperor over these Germans, but the German princes are ready to defend the Reformation against him. That was a crisis of conscience for Luther because it sounds like rebellion, right? The German princes rebelling against their liege lord. And Luther writes a tract called A Warning to His Dear German People, arguing that if you sign up to fight under the German princes against the imperial troops, which were surely coming, it wouldn't be rebellion. It won't count as rebellion if you support the German princes in their defensive war against the emperor. His reasoning for that is not very clear. It's rather tortured. Luther's very uncomfortable by this. But he basically tries to say, what's really going on is not that you're fighting against your liege lord here. You're fighting against the Pope and his wicked attempt to repress the Reformation. Of course, as an individual Christian, you should suffer persecution for your faith. But the prince has an obligation to use the sword to defend his neighbor, and indeed his neighbor's spiritual welfare, to defend the church, to defend the Reformation.